I've just got two short poems about, they're both about writing. I hope you might like them. The first one is called Blood is Thicker Than Water. Trying to choose from a strong family of words so that my pen might draw blood, but instead I'm surrounded by mute acquaintances and the ink runs a bit thin. This one. The other one doesn't have a title. I'm pregnant with words, eager for delivery onto this blank page, wanting to come out as non-identical quintuplets, nervous about stillbirths, dead words, yearning to release new metaphorical life into this world. The delivery can be long and painful, locked up for hours in a small room, but in the end it's worth it, and finally I'm happy with my new creation. But the best part is in the placenta. I eat it selfishly, raw with meaning that no one else will ever know. Thank you.
Harry Doyle.
Thank you, pal.
Alright, as far as my third in fact, I'm not sure which. So yes, famous love poem called "Oh, My Love Is a Red, Red Rose." This lovely poem, I'm sure she's a lovely woman. There's a man up near me called Romy Byrne, and he has a wife, and she wasn't that nice, but she's a lovely woman, but she's a chronic alcoholic. And it turned out he's kind of a carer now, you know. So, he loved her. This is a red, red nose of the Byrne's. Oh, my love has a red, red nose, for my love she loves to drink. Well, my love's eyes are bleary eyes, and she's too drunk to think. Drunk art thou, my bonny lass, as deep in love am I, and I will love thee still, my dear, when all the beer's gone dry. When all the beer's gone dry, my love, and all the pubs are closed, I will love thee still, my dear, and love thy red, red nose. So drink your fill, my only love, drink it while thee can. This night will surely end, my love, but I'll always be your man.
So, Glenn started off by being pregnant, and this is another one. I was asked to go to a Mother Way blessing, which I never heard of before. It was for my goddaughter, so I wrote this. She is expecting her second child. Her first child, when it was in the womb, they didn't want to know what sex it was, so she just called it Poppy Seed. So I ran with the idea of the seedling. So this is called Slow Ripening. In the fertile place under your heart, you long for a second seedling to fall. The first has grown tall like a poppy in bloom and waves to the world in her joy. Out to the void your man casts a net to bring back another star child, the umbilical cord, a delicate thread that you wind in a slow, easy coil. Once embedded, the seedling takes root. Stretching and swelling, it curves out your form, humming a pulse in tune with your heart, like tropical rain pounding the blood. As weeks become months, you feel kicks and thumps. The infant grows heavy, a crusher of breath. Every muscle and sinew taut as a wire as you wait for a wave to lift you towards sleep. At last, there's the moment of final delivery. A spirit enfleshed comes to land upon earth. with fontanelle open to light and discovery, as pain turns to ecstasy after the birth.
Simon DC's smiley face.
Official surname there. This is called L'amore è eterno finché dure, which is appalling butchery of the Italian language there, but it means love is eternal while it lasts. A day ends just as the day begins. Panna drapes the air over the odd couple with the lights that quieten you. Lights like tiny berries of caught starlight, or lit buds of mistletoe, or miniature moons. Cork City calms. A sleeping man shifts his great hips where he beds down on the nights that he knows that he won't wake wet. There are stars over Ballincollig. A widow wakes in the glen. Between the drooping moons and the big key turning in the Glen Potter's door, people carry plastic trays past the smiles upon our faces, growing at precisely the same rate, as if both due to a shared ancestry. Doors bow before us. We step out into the street. Warm, the cold air feels like life, or home, or heaven itself. You push one delicate hand through my bent arm and draw me to you. How's Sardinia tonight? The same. It can't be the same. It's the same. The first stream of lights go by above us. We walk out onto Panna. Do you have work in the morning? Yeah. What do you want to do? We turn and stand facing each other. I pull you to me. My fists clench your warmth. What do you want to do? How can I miss you? Already, I think as I hesitate, a man convinced that by getting what he wants, he will lose just as much as he will gain. I kiss the bare coasts of your soul. I speak wordlessly with the skin upon your neck. I cradle your head in my palm. I summon silken strands to my stripped grip to have you here, where without fail you've been since you left.
Philippe Nepula. Hope I said that right. It's Philip.
It's fine.
It looks like a Philippe to me.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess a lot of slam poetry back in the States, the bee's knees back in the New York metropolitan area. That's where I'm from, so I don't know if you do a lot here. I'm going to do the first one I ever performed. It's called Class Consciousness. Maybe one day I'll own a car with a big house and a swimming pool, and maybe I would strike some good luck and afford being broke too. Because I'd rather not leave it on my child's kid to finally pay off this debt that I'm piling up. But until then, I'm going to have to learn to enjoy myself with whatever it means to do as such. I'll find myself in the shade, begging for the rest of my days, and in a year or two, I'll reach past Samsara somewhere very far away. And I'll float from those forbidding fences, thanking God that the skies can't be enclosed, making fun with him of my youth and other nonsense before, you know, my mind is completely disposed. So yes, I'll take another puff of that smoke. I know cancer will probably kill me regardless. For a man has a little hope, as I have, has a little hope in battling death. So I'm willing to be your role model. I'm willing to be the hero of the story. I'm willing to take that burden off of your shoulders. But, you know, you gotta let me lead. And until then, I gotta know my place. I gotta make it up on my own. But what kind of a world would we all live in if we left each other all alone? I'll find a kid with the beauty in him. Give him my rhythm and poems and just leave them. Run off other than need them, because I can't be attached to my own being. And until then, I've been burning myself, because that's all I've been acquainted with, without any emotion, or resolution, or any sense of ramification. Because quite frankly, I never understood lack of value in compassionate acts. I'd keep working as much as I could just to keep enough after brass tacks. So good day, mamas, Just go off and say hi to your sons. I know that sometimes it slips your mind. There are more important things to be done, and you know it's selfish to take up your time. So I'm willing to be your role model. I'm willing to be the hero of the story. I'm willing to take that burden off of your shoulders, but you gotta let me lead. And until then, I gotta know my place. I gotta make it up on my own. But what kind of a world will we all live in if we left each other all alone? Because I wasn't raised in no penthouse. I wasn't raised on no maid's lap. I made my life off cheating, swindling with spoiled, soiled, sardonic saps. I've got a reputation to reinstate by those who place it upon me. I gotta spread my wings off blind faith and risk the comfort of the nest that I've already weaved. I was never known to be no humanist. I think everyone's actually intrinsically sick, and maybe I'll enjoy that automobile, but until that day, I'll pretend that life is infinite. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Phil. Alexandra Bigley.
You'll pardon my nervosity, as I'm not accustomed to performance. Or poetry, really. I wrote this poem in the Princess Street Gardens in Edinburgh, where I was living last year, for my daughters, actually. Because I had first read Robert Burns' To a Mouse. It's an incredible poem, and it really made me fall in love with poetry, even though I don't have much time for poetry right now. I'm giving this moment for it anyway. So this is a child's adaptation, because I wanted to share it with my daughters Augusta and Selene. So obviously, so, okay. Why be a mouse? Rab is sitting in the dark. He can't sleep, though Mom and Dad have told him it's bedtime. As his eyes become heavy and his breath deep, a scratchy, scratching rustling startles him from his sleep. From the dark corner of his room, Rab can now see. What creature in the dark makes such a noise to wake him? A wee bitty mouse with two bits of coal for eyes stares at him, scratchy, scratching, rustling. I wish I could be a mouse, says Rab to himself, so I could stay up as long as I please, and run wild in the vast open fields with no end in sight. I wish I could be a mouse, so I could be free. Suddenly, with a fluttering of the tiny creature's whiskers, comes a voice so meek that Rab can barely hear its surprising words. I wish I could be a beloved child, says the tiny beastie. Rab, finding himself amused by the companionship of this most unusual tenant, keeps quiet. Wonder brings a peculiar smile to his face. I wish I could be a beloved child, says the wee beastie, so I can know the warmth of a bed and the safety of Constance. I wish I could be a beloved child, repeats the mouse, so I could share my daily lute with my beloved, which I never have known. As no marauder such as I would ever refuse the warm cloak of life such as yours, oh, sweet, beloved child. And so the mouse scratched and rustled away into the corner, back to its life of precarious freedom, whilst Rab lay down and closed his eyes, soothed by the warm embrace of his home.
Thanks very much. We've had so many mice here tonight. I've got to put a cat in there. Oh, I didn't say that actually. It's called Night Shadow. Like a shadow in the night you come, velvet pawed and dark as silence, pausing shyly in the shades as you gently mark my garden with smooth, headstrong strokes. Black as the night you come nearer and leave me stay closer. As I slowly offer you my hand, you linger in safe distance still, yet quietly calling, mouncing. Rolling before me on the concrete, lulling, meowing, asking me, You slip closer, drawing tight, stroking strongly around my legs, sinuous, silent, soft as night. And when you finally allow my hand to feel and touch your silky fur, my midnight visitor, you purr, and so do I. You come, my friend, for this one moment of being close, and like a shadow in the night, you go. I would like to read another one, if that's okay.
Yep.
Well, I have two here.
One.
Not too long? One. Okay. Right. Which one will I go for?
Short one.
This one was always the second one. I work at the Triskell Arts Centre and have translated the English language tour through the church into German, and have done a few tours, not many, but have guided a few tours through the church. So I've developed a bit of a relationship with that church, and this is called the Graves of Christ Church. And if someone wants to put music to this, you're very welcome to approach me. I like to stand on these graves at night, feeling that earthy energy of someone dead there under my feet, beneath the gravestones of Christ Church. Maybe somebody who drove the Catholics from their land and homes in the siege of Cork, or someone who planned in the first city council the Protestant coup with Orange support. I like to feel their skulls crushed, their bones brittled to less than dust, or more to earth. Maybe by rejoining the origin of life, their sins are wiped. I like to stand on these graves at night, feeling that earthy energy of someone dead there under my feet, beneath the gravestones of Christ Church. Maybe one of the malnourished children in care of the school, too poor and weak, who evaded their shipment to England and the labour on the boats by death. Through my naked souls I can feel that they have come to peace, free and reunited with their souls, and on those graves I dance. I like to stand on these graves at night, feeling that earthy energy of someone dead there under my feet, beneath the gravestones of Christ Church. But also I sense with my soul and feet, treading on these weathered tombs, that the impact of those buried here has unto the present never died. So I like to stand on the graves of Christ Church, feeling that earthy energy, like crushing their skulls beneath my feet, so that history will never repeat.
Billy Ramsell. Spreadsheet. Yeah, we're out of my time statistics, come on.
Typical Rams or Winters object.
Rams are in the space.
So that wasn't actually a gimmick, that just really happened. Antonio Gaudi. He's an architect. Has anybody heard of him?
Yeah.
Everyone's heard of him. He did, you know, all those famous buildings in Barcelona, right? This is not about him. It's about Josep Puig Cadafalch, who was one of his contemporaries and rivals and worked for many decades in Gaudí's shadow, and sometimes actually literally, as in he was making a building that was Gaudí's building, this massive fucking building, and he was just building a small house next to it. Sad but true. And in his poem, speaking to him just after he's born, to Cadafalch, Puig Cadafalch. Cruelty, Cadafalch, to be at this hour hatched into the too-late world. Your new blue eyes look out from your mother's spent sleeping breast. You coo to the silent nursery, tentatively, resentfully, as if the news has already reached you. He's already here, already 13, his pen already a prosthesis. He's already watching narrative and lizard skin, rhymes and runaway handfuls of honey and of spawn, contemplating flock flight, for decades when he's lost for hours, where his brother's blows can't find him. Tracing in the movement of birds a billowy mechanism, a sketchbook in every feathery arrowhead. And yet you'll believe, you'll credit the envious whispers in the lecture hall in the apprentice yard, assigning you and he to the same dispensation. You believe the sycophants and spoofers when your first commissions come in, who attribute to your palaces and his a comparable panache, and backhandedly praise your restraint. And when every slut and cutpurse tells you your business in the dive bars of the China Quarter, amid the accordions, amid the absent and the harlequins, you believe them too. You heed thieving imbibers when they drink to your facility, the opinionated whores who dub your Casa Sera the finest in the city. Though when he pulls off the quarry, you'll shun brandy and cava, jealousy's clearer stinging gin, enough to bust the capillaries at your cheekbones and under your eyes. You continue to ogle floor plans, your mind twitching and inverting itself to engender proportion, to wince at the bromides and imbecilities of clients when you take tea at their summer houses, to micromanage polishing of balustrades and hinges. Until you know your work for cantrips, for doodles, mere bagatelles, when his reckless cathedral rises in the Champlain. From under the awning of Bar del Quadicia, daily between noon and two, you'll study its terrible emergence, each phase of life rippling its chameleon growth as it squirms and stumbles upwards, with all its chapels evolving as they simmer and recombine, rework discarded matter into spines their skins would climb on, and all its facades coagulate, boil and settle into impasto, into curdled rippling hides, and all its sapling spires strain for the light above the boulevards, for the inviolate, for the world's fresh attic. Until, on an afternoon when starched winter sunlight makes cold galaxies of concrete dust and damps the yammering construction, you feel the cathedral enter you. Your two arms, unbidden, stretch and extend, spastic, cruciform, as a transept's length passes through them. Torque and insistency, rubble sows into your crypt belly. You feel your own flesh consolidate, hardening into masonry, your organ stuff into its nave and narthex, and you step forward, staggering, all heedless of the trams, of the children shimmied away from your flailing topcoat. As your forehead's altar tilts skyward towards that irresistible rising thing, with all its churning carnivals of stone, with its peaks, its swarming nativities, insurmountable, grotesque. Thanks.
Hello, I've never done this before, so please bear with me. It's a poem by Susanna Tenon. She's Spanish, and it's translated by Maria Negroni and Anne Twitty. It's called Nuptial Fawn. I got married to myself. I said yes, a yes that took years to arrive. Years of unspeakable suffering, of crying with the rain, of suffering myself in my room, because I, the great love of my existence, did not call myself, did not write to myself, did not visit myself, and at times, when I did get the courage to call myself, to say, hello, am I well? I wouldn't come to the phone. I even put myself on a list of pains in the neck I didn't want to talk about, because they drove me nuts, because they wouldn't let me alone, because they backed me into corners, because I couldn't stand them. At the end, I didn't even pretend. When I asked if I was there, I let myself know, tactfully, that I was fed up with myself. And one day I stopped calling myself and stopped calling myself. And so much time went by that I missed me. So I said, how long has it been since I called? Ages. It must be ages. And I called myself, and I answered, and I couldn't believe it, because it's hard to believe. I hadn't healed. I'd only been bleeding. Then I said, "Hello, is that me?" "It's me," I said, and added, "It's been a long time since we've heard I from myself or myself from me. Would I like to come over?" "Yes," I said, and we met again in peace. And I felt good with myself, and myself as well felt good with me. And so, day after day, I married, and I am together, and not even this can part me.
This is called Machiavellian Dream. Dusk styles the scarf skin of a wildwood fox, smouldering in a glassy amethyst glow. Thin filaments rue that cold and ancient sun, with the heavenly ring clear yet softly glazed. To autumnal temper comes the godhood, languished and still, pressed solemnly to lilac wonders, and the shapening and reshaping of hands, carved in ciphered light, like infant miracles opening in quilted curls. Night's clasp relents, as the thaw unearths a starflower air. Reckless, exuberant, your luxuries rouse the mania of placid glory in those deathly men, where the word is hewed and in whispers entombed. From morning's mist, the stealth paw looms, the brazen axle of a ghosting predator, in a pantheon of prayer and pale remains, to her judgment than a star-crossed lover stormed. What cobalt ribbon trust gosmer upon your labyrinth eye, poised ecstatic in azure brilliance, as the sailing stars steer another cloudless affection? Rather the wealth of this delicate word to rip it in frigid light, than to lift apart those ebon slate wonders, still beating in a monument of cacophonic sound. This vision ends in a reflex of leaves, where flattery wills and drips gently from the eaves, and the ivory breath of a mildewed morning cloaks the thick shadow of a wildwood fox.
Alan O'Gorman. This is in a poem or a letter from a guy called Johnny. He's written a few, and this is to his mother. Dear man, I'm sorry I haven't written to you, but hey, you're the one who left. I'm the one who's left feeling guilty. I had a dream we were down in Carmack Sherry, and the caravan was burnt to the ground. I came up through the woods and over a little hill, and you were just standing in the middle of the rubble and ashes, in your bare feet and dressing gown. I didn't know where Dad was, and you just looked at me. There's nothing going on around here. This so-called city sucks at your soul like a vaporizer. It burns your chest and it stings your throat and it numbs your head. But sorry, less of the weed talk. I've been drinking again. I know I said I was off it, but you don't understand. You don't remember how cold it gets, not where you are. Sometimes I just can't face going back to the basement bedroom, the damp walls, sleeping in three hoodies, and being woke by your own shivering, knowing that outside the bed it's no better and there's no end to it all, without at least a drop of the whiskey in you, or a nag in a gin, or a bottle of vodka. Speaking of, I saw Uncle Tony the other day. He was talking about you, said he's after cleaning himself up. This is down in Cashman's, mind you, with his whiskey nose buried in his pint. He was looking horrendous. He started talking about how he hasn't seen Rebecca or Owen since Fanula left him, but the ketamine started to sink in, so I left. If you'd have seen me stumbling down Penrose Wharf, you'd be ashamed. I slept on a bench and pissed myself that night. And when I was walking home, with the grey sun up and people averting their eyes, all of the picture was Tony's nose and his bleeding, painful words. A sorry man, wanting his sorrow, embracing it like a found child, and I thought I'd clean myself up. That was a Tuesday. It's raining outside, lashing down. Why would anyone get out of bed? I drew a massive stick man on my wall one night when I couldn't sleep, and I don't like the way he's looking at me. Oh, wait till I tell you this. Remember Owen Lee Dwyer? Sure, if it wasn't Owen Lee Dwyer, you used to call him. He's running in the local elections. Independent, though, he is. Wish you could see the campaign posters plastered up all over town. The grin on him like a slug escaping a rain assault. He looks like he's trying to jump out of the way of the camera. Remember the time he came round to give out about Spotty pissing on the flowers in his porch? And Dad called him a nosy, useless gombeen, and he threw the water from the toothbrush cup out the window all over his back. Well, I've never seen a man so disgusted. I tried to fall in love, man. Tried my best. I stopped taking everything except the odd drink. Started cutting me hair and all, trying to look decent. I started hanging around with some of the old lads again. Started kind of seeing this one. She was Scottish and mousy, a quiet girl. I liked that. And she liked me. Like, really liked me. She tried coming around my place all the time. She didn't mind the basement bedroom and the dankness at all. And she felt good in my bed. I wasn't that cold anymore. Her feet were warm, and I placed mine against them when I woke. And her breath was warm. And I could have her there, any night I wanted. I didn't have to go out anymore. I didn't have to worry about anything. But I couldn't do it. I missed being alone. I missed wandering around town at night with my hood over my head. I missed having no phone. I missed not having to worry about fucking up someone else's night, or weekend, or life. I missed pushing myself to the limits and having only myself to be accountable to. So I hurt her. I know I shouldn't have, but I couldn't tell her. I hurt her because I can't talk. I can only act. I told her to call over one evening, and I got an A of coke off James. I know, I shouldn't be hanging around with the likes of him. And I let her see what I'm really like, the asshole I am. I tore up the house and I called her awful things, man, things I'd never repeat to you. And it sickens me. And you know what she did? She asked for some. She wanted to take some too. She said she'd do it with me so that we could go through it together. And it broke my heart. It broke it in two, and I don't ever want to see her again. It's 5:48 a.m. Say hi to Dad. Love, your only son, Johnny. P.S. I just realized this letter sounds like you're dead. She's only in Australia. No matter. I'll probably tear up in the morning anyway.
Bridget Sprouls.
Figurines on a brick mantelpiece, their rapt faces glinting, ghostly chandeliers. Ceramic busts balloon to lapels rakish splay as each gent stoops or woozily sways despite the amused lips of his vitrified dame. With time our waps of embrace clink and our fingers change to bloodless tines. I kiss your earlobe down the sink. You break your palm on my backside. But drink, we found, is decent glue. It keeps my nose a nostril thing and dulls the whistle through our chinks. So, quick, before my tongue explodes, I'd like to offer up this toast. To you, my dear, and that glazed look, and all the reasons in the book.
Don't go getting any romantic inklings, but why not? Yes, I'll meet you at some cafe. Nicholas Sparks doesn't write little flings, so don't think P.S. I love you type things. I will be honest enough in what I'll say, just don't go getting any romantic inklings. Wear your favorite outfit or earrings, if you wish. Color your skies as you may, but Nicholas Sparks doesn't write little flings, and won't write the book of us. A bird sings this morning, perhaps, but not for us, I'd say. Don't go getting any romantic inklings. A bird sings each morning the future brings. Yours is no part for Hilary Swank to play, and Nicholas Sparks doesn't write little flings. We won't talk about old loves and failings. We could find happiness enough, in a way. Just don't go getting any romantic inklings. Nicholas Sparks doesn't write little things. Thank you.
Anthony Britt.
It's love. I don't ever want to see your heart stop beating. I am afraid to accept it. Our beauty's full, our fleeting. And decomposing, turning to the purest bright white light, illuminating hungry shadows. I am afraid I am already losing my happiness. I'm not afraid. I just don't want to not know. The blood is in you pulsing. You are alive with me now. It's love.
Grant Urquhart.
Am I last?
More or less.
More or less. Am I?
Yes.
No, you're not.
He's last. You're last.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't abuse my position as MC.
No, but I said to you, you don't have to put me in. Just, I mean, it's... My thinking was, okay, like, Bond's poetry has been in the air. You know? We've had a bit of Bond, and that's what I said I'd do, it's joy. So this, I'm going to do this... to joy. My father was a farmer. My father was a farmer from up in the Carrick border, and carefully he raised me in dignity and order. He beat me out of a manly path, though I never had a farthing. For without an honest manly heart, no man was worth regarding. So out into the world my course I did determine, though to be rich was not my wish. Great was charming. My talents, they were not the worst, nor yet my education. Resolved was I at least to try to mend my situation. Through many a way and vain essay, I courted fortune's favour, some cause unseen still stepped between to frustrate each endeavour. Sometimes by foes I was overpowered, sometimes by friends. And when my hope was at the top, I still was most mistaken. And then so at last, and tired at last with fortune's vain delusion, I dropped my schemes like idle dreams, and I came to this conclusion. The past is dead, the future's hid, it's good or ill untried, but the present hour is in my power. And so I will enjoy it.
Thank you very much, Amira. That was most enjoyable. I'm going to abuse my position as MC to read out my attempt at the five words. So much for a quick early exit. Step out of the taxi, into the rain, through the door, then another door, tattoo parlour. Etched with rock icons. Extremely drunk, dizziness overtook her, rising the Escher staircase. Disappearing into dark warrens of the interior. Inside she disappears. I stand in the bedroom. A wretch echoes down from the corridor. I survey the detritus of the dresser. Empty blister packs of Prozac beside concealers and mascara. All conceals, hiding the melancholy. A thin veneer of accepted sanity beside a thin veneer of accepted beauty. Another wretch. Then sorry, 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 an apology aloud. Lost in the porcelain embrace, she has forgotten I'm here. But make sure she's safely tucked in. Glass of water. Return to the welcoming rain. Return to the mouse in my bed. Thank you to everyone who read. Thank you to Annette, our guest. Don't forget to submit your poem to your